You are fine.
Okay.
Okay.
Lloyd Benson.
Lloyd Benson. Right.
His campaign against Jarvis, 1970.
It was a dirty campaign. I was in an elevator at the Democrats' mini convention in Kansas City, and somebody appeared to detect that we were from Texas and volunteered to me that he asked if we were for Benson. I'm not for Benson. Some of the other delegates are not for Benson. For president or vice president, in my case, I favor him for neither. And one of the other delegates from some other states said, well, I'll tell you this, defeating Ralph Yarber has no redeeming social value. And I agree with that. I think that campaign was a dirty, ambitious, conservative campaign. It was unjustified. It was indefensible. And he now asks us, he says he made mistakes in that campaign and he regrets it. And what that puts me in mind of is Nixon's campaign against Helen Gahagan Douglas. It seems to me, once a man attains power in a dirty campaign, he should not be forgiven that. We should have learned that from other politicians who have done so. A man can repent, and furthermore can attain redemption.
But the
necessity to repent and our fullness of heart as he approaches his redemption does not require us to trust him with higher office, especially the presidency. I hope that Mr. Benson's redemption is consummated, but not in the presidency. When a man asks you to be president, he asks you to trust him with everything, including the lives of hundreds of millions of people. That is a substantial request. It's a major request of us as citizens. And I think we saw who Benson was in the campaign. My mind leaps back to 1951 when he was a member of the House of Representatives and advocated that if the North Koreans did not give up or whatever it was he said, we should atom bomb them. Now, he is now taking positions much more rational on military, on questions of war and peace. But I do remember that.
What about Lyndon Johnson?
Let me get back to Benson a little bit. Do you find any the Trident submarine contract going to Lockheed, for whom Benson was once a board member, do you find anything nefarious about that?
I do not. I don't know enough about it yet to conclude that it was good or bad. The interpretation has been put forward to me that in his representation, that he delayed the contract being let in order to save the government money, covered activity to get the contract for Lockheed, which of course eventuated. I do not know if that is so. It is certainly worth knowing to be true or false, but I don't know if it's true or false.
How about the allegation by Senator Yarborough that Benson spent $6.5 million in that campaign?
Well,
I'm not asking you whether you know it to be true or false, but do you believe it to be believable or gross exaggeration?
And he spent an awful lot of money. He spent an awful lot of money. And I'm just afraid, I don't know whether that's an exaggeration or not, because I think they've been lying to us so long about how much they spent. And that was before any honest reporting had to be done. It doesn't seem to me that he would, if he could raise it, scruple to spend it to get the Senate seat. But I don't know whether he did or not. And I just don't want to characterize it with rhetorical terms. I don't know what he spent. He spent a hell of a lot.
But you don't view it automatically then as gross exaggeration?
It's just not in the range of my knowledge. $6.5 million or $650,000. I mean, most progressive candidates for governor or senator spend $500,000. So the idea of the moneyed candidate spending 10 times that, that's not beyond my imagination.
What is the connection between Robert Straws and Benson, and particularly in Benson's presidential ambition?
Well, Strauss was a close friend of John Connally, as he openly acknowledges, of course. And raising that fact has to be done carefully, because now Connally is generally anathematized in some public opinion, and it's unfair to emphasize that point. I do not raise it for that purpose. The connection is between Connally and Benson. Connally got Benson into the, he sought to get Benson to run against Yarborough in 64, and he got him into the race in 70 and raised scans of money for him. This is, you know, everybody knows this. Benson was Connally's candidate against Yarborough. Now, it is also true that Connally is a close friend of Strauss. It is, in other words, a circle. I consider it, as I told Strauss the other day in Kansas City in front of a committee, I consider Strauss in Texas a conservative Democrat, a very conservative Democrat. Nationally, he is playing the broker's game, just like Benson is. But in Texas, Strauss was a conservative Democrat. And his connections to Connally are clearly in the nexus of a group of friends, including Benson. I would not go anywhere near as far as to imply or hint or even believe that Strauss is partisan to Benson's candidacy. I think the national situation is far too complex for Texas friendships to govern. But they're friends, obviously.
We're going to ask about Lyndon Johnson.
You said that Connally was Johnson's relative.
Oh, and by the way, before we go on, obviously, Benson is... I mean, if Briscoe is leaving a vacuum, Benson would like to fill it, right? Now, he has one problem that Johnson did not, and that is the death of the unit rule. The favorite son tradition was founded on the unit rule. Everybody understood that the majority took the convention, and then everybody got behind the state's candidate, you know, and it was very difficult to oppose the favorite son. Now, I don't know whether the favorite son psychology will be as strong for Benson as it was for Johnson. If it is, Benson won't have any trouble. But if it isn't, and I think it probably won't be, Wallace is going to take 20, 30% of the delegates, 10, 15, 20, 35%, who knows? If the progressives then get behind whoever emerges as the progressive candidate, the surrogate for Mondale in our present context, what do they get? 30, 40%? What if Jimmy Carter comes over and gets some of the Baptist vote? You see, by the time you get into this Europeanized context, the question is, will Benson have a majority? I do not regard it as a foregone conclusion that he will, and I hope he doesn't.
Do you anticipate that Yarborough would play an active role in trying to see that he doesn't?
Yes, obviously.
And he would be reasonably effective, I'd presume, in Texas, right?
He certainly would be effective with the 40% of the people who followed him in every election, wouldn't he? I mean, granted, he has no power now, but he has access to a lot of opinion. How effective he'd be would depend on how open and active he was. But
being more open and more active make him more effective?
I think so.
He's not likely to be one to be reticent about it.
He is not. He's not reticent at this point, although he's off the record. Everybody knows he's against Benson.
Well, he doesn't hide his feelings.
He does not. I really think much more depends on the national context.
Yarborough would paint Benson as if he became president, he would really be the, you know, the voice of big wealth.
I think that's correct.
You would agree with that?
I agree with that. I think Yarborough is wise and correct when he says that big wealth knows that it's cheaper to buy a convention than it is to buy an election. And if they can buy both conventions, they will. And that's what they're trying to do with the Benson candidacy, in my opinion. If I were big wealth, that's the way I'd look at it. If I were corporations laying political strategy, I'd say, well, let's see if we can't win the Democratic Convention too. That's exactly what I'd do. And that's what they're doing, in my opinion, with Benson. I think he knows it. I think Benson knows it. I think he knows that's what he's doing.
Is Benson his own
man? That, of course, is only intuitive.
Is Benson his own man?
I have never been willing to discuss loosely another person's integrity. You'd have to ask him.
Well, I know what his answer would be.
Well, I just don't believe...
No, I mean,
when Shivers was governor, I was not willing to do that. I am not willing to do that unless a person does something that is, you know, like a writing on a blackboard. I just don't want to do that. Character and personality are too subtle to reduce to such terms. I have private opinions, but I, you know, this is on the record. And I, you know, no. Okay, take it off if you want to.
There was a story in the Kansas City Star about Benson.
Yeah, I'll find it for you before you leave town if you want it. Yeah, that his bar bill in Kansas City was, that Benson's bar bill was $20,000 and used 500 quarts of liquor. I mean, unfortunately, people vote when they're drunk sometimes. He raised something like, I don't know, $350,000 at one dinner in Houston. Well, his defense is he didn't accept any corporate contributions, I'm sure that's so. Of course, we know about that, don't we? I mean, we know more and more about that. Go ahead.
Has wealth in Texas developed a sense of social responsibility?
No.
Is it apt too soon?
Well, it depends on what you mean by a sense of social responsibility. If you mean cosmetic, sure. I mean, American business is becoming much more cosmetically concerned about social responsibility. The major oil companies are hiring competent ecologists out of the Sierra Club. The question is, what happens to those people? Do they really affect policy, or do they prevent the corporation from making errors when they could follow another course that would have the same or approximately the same effect on optimum profit making? I mean, it's a cosmetic question. You remember when Lyndon tried to get the corporations to take on jobs, the jobs program in the summer of 1968? They did it for 1 year. I mean, it was responsive to power. That was the way you, if the Democrats won again, you wanted to be on good terms with them, but that's the end of it. I think that I rejoice in every sign of corporate responsibility that there is, but I think whenever you get up against stockholder expectations and the American, the current American definition of corporations as charged to optimize profit, I think that's what's going to prevail. I agree with Barry Kalner that the basic problem is the profit motive as it is opposed to general welfare.
I was speaking more in Texas, so personal wealth as opposed to corporate wealth. Because Texas has a hell of a lot of it, more than any other
some
state.
Wealthy people are absolutely idealistic. In Texas, Bernard Rappaport, let me tell you a story. I went to, in 1955 or 6. Well, maybe I'll have to tell you this story.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I better not. Rappaport has to function in the business community. I'll be more general. Rappaport funds idealistic causes all the way from Amnesty International to Sissy Fanville. I mean, he's...
Did he fund Yarbrough?
Yeah. State campaign finance chairman for Yarbrough. He was the campaign finance chairman for Mondale nationally before Mondale withdrew. He's just a great person. He's full of ideals and
does he have an impact on Texas politics?
Yeah, he really does. And J.R. Parton is another. A very wealthy man who progressives would consider progressive on everything but oil. Funds liberal candidates, funds progressive causes. So, sure, there are individuals who are socially responsible. Wealthy individuals. Walter Hall is another one. Liberal banker in Dickinson. I can think of others. But that is not the subject. The subject you asked is, are corporations becoming socially responsible? And generally the answer is no. Fair enough.
No, my question was the corporation, is wealth in Texas becoming socially responsible?
Well, but you see, you use a term like wealth in Texas. That's an unreal term. Most wealth in Texas is not, by my standards, socially responsible. Some wealthy people are. A few wealthy people are. A number of wealthy people are, but not a bulk of them.
Is it becoming
more responsible? And you see exceptions. You look at the pattern and you see exceptions. No, I don't think so. No.
So is the fact that there is so much wealth in Texas, which remains relatively new wealth, likely to continue the sharp conservative liberal splits in politics?
Yeah, although I think the word progressive is probably going to supersede liberal. Yeah, I think that's likely.
A progressive suggests then that liberals are moving somewhat to the right ideologically.
To the left.
As a liberal.
The liberals are moving to the left, and that's why they're calling themselves progressives. After the war, and with corporate domination of the economy and the government, they're moving left.
The progressives then are the old liberals.
The progressives are the new liberals. They are the post-Vietnam, post-Watergate liberals who are sick of people who call themselves liberals and flinch all the time. That's the way I would define them. But obviously you're just playing with words here.
The words in Texas, we never got into this in any other state. This is the 11th state. And you never had this, it never came up. That we were talking about, we said Texas is the only state where there are enough liberals to be paranoid.
It reminds me of a bumper sticker I saw. Paranoids have enemies too.
Let me get back to your proposition. Finally, with Johnson's governor, dominated the politics of Texas in the 60s.
Sure, what do you want to talk about?
How did he do this?
Well, one thing he did was defend the Vietnam War. That was the crucial question. Connally defended the war, and he defended military spending and all that. Another thing he did was he did not, except on the public accommodations law, in my immediate memory, he did not diverge from Johnson's domestic policies. You know, he just sort of sat here and kept the state from Lyndon. And Lyndon would call him.
Did he do this by appointments or by his policies? I mean, what in terms of the state government did he do? Or did he do anything?
Not much.
But you had this interesting phenomenon going on in the 60s. You had Lyndon as president, Connally representing the conservative Democrats holding on to Texas, Yarborough in the Senate writing the legislation of the Great Society.
Helping write it, that's right. That's one reason. Well, no, that's not true. Lyndon opposed Yarborough being opposed, effectively opposed Yarborough being opposed in 64. The question is why? What if he hadn't? What if Texas had been divided between a conservative Democrat like Joe Kilgore or Lloyd Benson running against Yarborough? He would have hurt Lyndon. I mean, I wound up for Lyndon that year. Well, what about the Texas liberals at that time? What would we have done? Well, if Lyndon had so much as raised an eyebrow in favor of the conservative, it would have cost him nationally. He knew that. It was to his interest, it was to Lyndon's interest to break his lifelong pattern of alliance with the Texas conservative Democrats that year, and he did.
All right. Who was the real Lyndon Johnson? Was he the man of the Great Society?
Oh, excuse me from that question.
No,
for the time being, excuse me.
Really,
from that question.
Really?
Oh, that he changed.
Excuse me from that question.
That's a crucial question.
You answer it. I'm trying to answer it, but I've been at it 6 years, and I don't feel like I can do it in the next minute and a half.
You've got 30 minutes.
I don't.
All right, Lyndon Johnson, obviously very complex, very shrewd, calculating politician.
Absolutely, obviously.
You're doing well, Bass. Keep going.
And he certainly would be against his own self-interest to oppose Yarborough in 64 because of the reasons you stated.
Clear.
At the same time, he, knowing Yarborough's talents, knowing Yarborough's tendencies, knowing Yarborough's abilities, knowing Yarborough's...
May I press the bench?
And knowing Yarborough's proclivities towards social legislation, and if Lyndon were thinking, and he certainly would be capable of it, if he's going to want to out-Roosevelt, would it not also be in his self-interest to have Yarborough in the Senate to, in effect, use him?
Well, I think it was you who was saying a minute ago how subtle Johnson's mind was. He was a very intelligent man. And that factor, like every other factor, that is Yarborough's utility as a liberal in the Senate, would have been in his mind. But you're suggesting, and it is true that it would now be aligned with Johnson's legislative self-interest. That is the pertinent difference. Because antecedently, it never affected Johnson that Yarborough stood for good things. Johnson gutted Yarborough up and down for all those years. So I would not, the difficulty with your attempt to extract virtue out of that position is that Johnson never paid any attention to Yarborough's virtue as long as Yarborough was independent of Johnson's ambition. It was only when Johnson's political self-interest in 1964 and his prospective legislative self-interest in 1965 converged that he helped Yarborough. Now, if you wish to go to the larger question of whether he was nobly actuated in his legislative program, excuse me from that question.
Okay. I accept your no comment.
There's a comment.
Walter, do you want to ask anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
End interview with Ronnie Duggar. No more transcription. This tape.